Chapter 12, Expansions of Advaita Acharya and Gadadhara Pandit, text number 13. Achyutananda Vadashaka Acharyananda
Achyutananda Vadashaka Acharyananda
Ajanma Sevidatena Chaitanya Chara
Ajanma Sevidatena Chaitanya Chara.
Translation: a big branch of Advaita Acharya was his son Achyutananda. From the beginning of his life, he engaged in the service of the lotus feet of Lord Chaitanya. Text number 14. Chaitanya Gosaira Guru Keshava Bharate E Pitra Vakyasane Dukkha Pailate. When Achyutananda heard from his father that Keshava Bharati was the spiritual master of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he was very unhappy. Jagat Gurite Tumi Kare Archa Upadesh. He told his father, your instruction that Keshava Bharati is the spiritual master of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu will spoil the entire country. Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is the spiritual master of the 14 worlds, but you say that someone else is a spiritual master. This is not supported by any revealed scripture. Panchama Vashra Balaka Kaya Siddhanta Shara Sunya Paila Acharya Santoshapara. When Advaita Acharya heard this statement from his 5-year-old son, Achyutananda, he felt great satisfaction because of his conclusive statement. Purport. Commenting on verses 13 through 17, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur gives an extensive description of the descendants of Advaita Acharya. Chaitanya Bhagavat Antya Kanda chapter 1 states that Achyutananda was the eldest son of Advaita Acharya. The Sanskrit book Advaita Charita states that Advaita Acharya had 3 sons who were devotees of Lord Chaitanya. Their names were Achyuta, Krishna, Mishra and Gopadas, and they were all born of the womb of his wife Sita Devi. Advaita Acharya also had 3 more sons whose names were Balaram, Sarup and Jagadish. Thus, there were 6 sons of Advaita Acharya. Among the 6 sons, 3 were strict followers of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and of these 3, Achyutananda was the eldest. Advaita Prabhu married in the beginning of the 15th century Sagupta, the late 15th century AD. When Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu wanted to visit the village of Ramakeli while going from Jagannath Puri to Vrindavan during the Sagupta, years 1433 and 1534, AD 1511 and 1512, Achyutananda was only 5 years old. This is a very, very long purport, which we cannot possibly digest in one go. So Achyutananda, being the eldest son of Advaita Acharya, was one of the faithful sons of Advaita Acharya. A schism came about amongst the sons of Advaita Acharya because there were a number of them who were establishing that not Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, but that Advaita Acharya was the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And a whole schism came about because of that. And they were also leaning, at least Jagadish, leaned towards impersonalism. So we are that too. In this way, it's said that 3 sons worked very hard to undo all the work that their father did. And that's what is said about these 3 sons of Advaita Acharya. So it's important, we have to therefore, whatever information we get about Advaita Acharya, really has to be filtered. When it comes to Nityananda and Advaita Acharya, they are both interesting personalities because, after all, they are both known as expansions of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And therefore, there is a family lineage coming from them, which is also not considered ordinary, right? Like, you know, I'm the son of God, kind of thing. Or, you know, I come so many generations in this lineage of God, therefore my origin is divine. So, therefore, this was called either Nityananda Vamsa or Advaita Vamsa, the family lineage coming from either Advaita or Nityananda. So direct seminal lineage is considered very important. Then, additionally to that, there is these personalities in the Advaita Vamsa or the Nityananda Vamsa, they became gurus. They were natural gurus because, after all, they were in a direct seminal connection with the incarnation of the Lord. Then their disciples, they became known as the Pariwar, the family. So you have Advaita Pariwar and you have Nityananda Pariwar. So you have Advaita Vamsa, Advaita Pariwar. Or some of the Advaita Pariwar started to initiate. Others said that was not bona fide. Only the Advaita Vamsa could initiate. So it is a whole mix up if we look there. And then many books have been written about Advaita Acharya, and not all of them are to be accepted as bona fide. And in fact, very few. When Srila Bhaktisiddhanta speaks out strongly about that, one book that has been particularly entered into our movement is the Advaita Prakash, right, and has been extensively read, and on appearance days of Advaita Acharya is taken off the shelf, and Srila Bhaktisiddhanta condemns the book as not bona fide in his introduction to the Chaitanya Charitamrita. Academics have done further work on the book and state that it's not, first of all, it's supposed to be written by a servant of Advaita Acharya named Ishan Krishna. So, but he got this detail wrong about Achyutananda. Achyutananda being 5 years old and meeting Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, who was a sannyasi at the time. So being at least 20 years or more younger than Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Whereas Ishan Nagar makes Achyutananda a classmate of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. In other words, puts him in the same age. And those are amongst the details that are wrong and that put the authorship of Advaita Prakash in question, because a personal servant of Advaita Acharya could not have made such a mistake. Academics trace the book back to approximately 150 years old and not 500 years old. Obviously, those who had taken their birth in the family lineage of Advaita Acharya had a lot of interest in creating a body of literature reaffirming or strengthening their position. So we see books where it is described that where it's emphasized that everyone would come to the house of Advaita Acharya to learn from Advaita Acharya the conclusions on the Bhagavad Gita and so on, that even Chaitanya Mahaprabhu heard first from Advaita Acharya and then he began teaching. So many books trying to establish the prominence of Advaita Acharya over the prominence of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Chaitanya Bhagavat, however, which is a recognized biography in Arsampadaya, describes a different situation. It describes that Advaita, before Chaitanya Mahaprabhu appeared, some good 50 years before Advaita Acharya appeared in this world, and that at that time Advaita Acharya would conduct classes on Bhagavad Gita at his home in Shantipur. And he was very scholarly, and he was trying to explain the Bhagavad Gita in a personal way, in the Vaishnava understanding that Krishna is the Supreme Lord and that we are the eternal servant of Krishna. But that was not always completely simple, because he didn't really have access to any supportive commentaries at the time. Like, we can turn to the commentaries of acharyas like Baladeva Vijayabhushan and Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, but they appeared later. And so later, Acharya at times found himself in an environment where the Gita was generally being explained in an impersonal way, and he was trying to explain it in the personal way. So sometimes he had difficulties. He said, but then Chaitanya Mahaprabhu would appear in his dream and would at night explain the verses to him, and like that. So it is said, there is another mention that when Chaitanya Mahaprabhu revealed his transcendental identity, that was for the first time in the house of Srivas Thakur, and then there was a meeting with many, many devotees, and at that time Chaitanya Mahaprabhu revealed something to each devotee. And to Advaita Acharya, there was a verse in the 13th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, which basically, I don't know the Sanskrit, because I have not got such a good memory, but it mentions that the hands of the Lord and the mouth of the Lord and so on are everywhere. So the verse seems to be indicating like an all-pervading presence of the Lord. And Advaita Acharya was puzzled. How am I going to explain this one? Right? This one in a personal way. This one really, like, it's going to be a tough one to present it in a way that it is not only convincing to myself, but that all these scholars who are explaining the Gita in an impersonalist way, saying the Lord is all-pervading, how can I convince them? So he was interested in convincing them, at least present an argument that they can't argue with. So he couldn't come up with it. But then during this time when Chaitanya Mahaprabhu revealed his identity as the Supreme Lord, which is known as the Mahaprakash Lila, or the Great Manifestation. At that time, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu explained that this verse refers to the Super Soul. So the hands of the Super Soul are everywhere. The eyes of the Super Soul are everywhere. The mouth of the Super Soul is everywhere, because the Super Soul is within the heart of every living being. In this way, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, completely faithful to the text, right, without any interpretation or bending it or this or that, gave a direct interpretation pointing to the Super Soul. So that was like strong. Yeah. Okay, here it is. So in this way, Chaitanya Bhagavat is putting Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in the authority position and Advaita Acharya in the dependent position. And that is the correct understanding, at least theologically. We take it that Ishvara Paramatma Krishna is Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, the original Supreme Personality of Godhead, from whom many incarnations manifest. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is known as Krishna Chaitanya. He is none different from Krishna. Krishna Varanam Tvisa Krishnam Sangupam Gasate Parasadam. He is the original Supreme Lord. Sangha, along with him, appeared his immediate expansions and his parsat, his associates. And that's basically what it says in Bhagavatam. Which is our main source of authority. Jiva Goswami has established that authority of Bhagavatam in his Tattva Sandarbha based on the Chandogya Upanishad. So he has established that the Puranas are part of the Panchaveda Puranas Itihasas Ramayana. That is an important point because, again, there are two types of Vedic literatures, the Shruti and the Smriti, that which is heard and that which is remembered. Shruti from Shravanam, Smriti from Smaranam, Shravanam hearing, Smaranam remembering. So it said that the Vedas are directly manifest from the breath of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Lord Vishnu, that is mentioned. So, but of course, they say, yes, that means only the Shruti, that means the four Vedas, which include, it's part of the Vedas are the Upanishads, and also the Brahmanas, and the Aranyakas, right? They are also, and Samhitas, these are all like subdivisions of the four Vedas. That's all that they count as Shruti. But then anything outside that, you know, that is Smriti, that is what is remembered. So that is of a different caliber, that is not directly coming from the Supreme Lord. But then the Shruti itself, in the form of one of the principal Upanishads, Chandogya is counted as a very important Upanishad, is establishing that no, it's also directly coming from the Supreme Lord, directly Veda. So that's very important. Therefore, on the basis of that, Bhagavatam's authority is not in question. And Bhagavatam establishes this order that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is Krishna, and that Advaita Acharya is his expansion, but not the origin. That from the one original Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is many other expansions arise, just as from one light many others are lit. However, Krishna is the original Supreme Person, and then from him come plenary portions, right? And then parts of plenary portions. So he expands himself in a plenary portion means a partial manifestation of Krishna. So the incarnations of Krishna, they do not have the same potency that Krishna had. They are not in the same way as Krishna. Sat Aishwarya Purna. Krishna is described as Aishwarya Sisamukrasya Viryasya Yasa Sarasvya Jnana Svairavyusha Chaiva Sanambhagami Tinkana. That he has these six opulences in full, all strength, all knowledge, all beauty, all renunciation, all fame, and which one did I forget? All wealth, very good. So he has all these six in full, and the other incarnations have them to a lesser extent. So that is an important consideration. Therefore, we understand that Advaita Acharya, we went on a Bangladesh excursion to the birthplace of Advaita Acharya. It was a long way. We had to go over two rivers and in between in what you call a tempo, like a large size rickshaw, but over rough terrain, and somehow or other we came to that area where Advaita Acharya appeared. No one knows the exact spot, but an area of 10 k's. And we found that it was exactly on the very edge of Bengal. And on the very edge. After that starts Meghalaya, and in Meghalaya it's no longer Vedic culture, there is tribal existence in in Meghalaya. For example, the people of Meghalaya have a practice that when one gets married, one is not only supposed to have one marriage, one is supposed to have two. One is marrying the girl in question, and then one also, it's actually if the father then of the girl dies, then the son-in-law has to also marry his mother-in-law. That's interesting. That's Meghalaya for you. And it has to be consummated as well, the marriage. So it's not just a paper marriage. So it's quite something, because the traditional relationship with the mother-in-law. So that's not, whatever it is, whatever culture it is, that's the culture of Meghalaya. And I will not make any purport to it. But it's definitely not Vedic culture. That's for sure. So Meghalaya is another type of society, tribal culture. They eat snakes and all kinds of things. So Advaita Acharya just appeared on the edge of the land of Goda, of Bengal, which is kind of a little bit parallel to his eternal identity. Because in his eternal identity, he has been defined as being none other than Mahavishnu or Sadashiva, both. And we know that Mahavishnu is also existing on the periphery or on the very edge of the spiritual world, on the causal ocean. The causal ocean is the border between the spiritual and the material world, between Haridam and Devidam. This causal ocean, also known as the Viraja River, is then the place where all the universes that that emanate from the body of Mahavishnu, from the pores of his body, they are floating on the causal ocean there in clusters together. Yeah. So this is the abode of Mahavishnu. Then we know that there is a period where there is a day of Brahma and a night of Brahma. During the day of Brahma, the material world is not manifest. It's not there. And all the ingredients of the material world, including the living beings, are entering into the body of Mahavishnu. At that time, this world is not there. But the potential of this world is always there. So that potential is known as pradana. It is said within the pradana, the three modes of material nature are in equilibrium, and therefore they counteract each other, and in that way the material world is no longer manifest. But then, when the time comes for the material, for the day of Brahma, at that time, it is Lord Mahavishnu who glances upon the pradana, the potential of the material energy, which then, and that glance becomes Lord Sadashiva, an expansion of Mahavishnu. So Sadashiva is the glance, and then Sadashiva comes in touch with the potential of the material energy, impregnates that with life. And at that point, the Mahatattva, or the total, to use a difficult word, conglomerate of all the material energies, is coming into existence. The living beings are now within matter. And there is the beginning of the creation. It is then Sadashiva, the expansion of Lord Mahavishnu, who is in direct contact with the material energy. And it is said then, what happens is what is described in the Brahma Samhita. Ksiram yatadadi vikara visesa yoga. A vikara takes place, a transformation. And that stage, Sadashiva becomes Shiva. What is described in Bhagavatam as the demigod Shiva. So, understanding it correctly, and we find this confirmed in the Brihadbhagavatamrita and also in Jiva Goswami's Satsandarbha, we find a description that there are two manifestations of Shiva. On either side of the Viraja, on either side of that river, the causal ocean which separates material and spiritual world, there is an abode of Shiva. On the spiritual side, there is the abode of Sada Shiva. On the material side, the abode of Rudra, or the demigod Shiva, as he's described in the Bhagavatam. The demigod Shiva stays in Mount Kailash, which was the abode of Kuvira. Originally, that was Kuvira, his residence, but he offered it to the demigod Shiva. So it's described in Bhagavatam. So it is said the demigod Shiva is not in the eternal position, but Lord Sada Shiva, he is a direct expansion from Lord Vishnu, and he is in the Vishnu Tattva category. Then when, as the glands, he comes into contact with the Pradhana, then he transforms and becomes that other tattva, that Shiva tattva, that separate tattva. And Jiva Goswami describes, like, when he comes in touch with the material energy like that, then it is like a lamp, an oil lamp, like one with the glass. And the glass has now become covered by soot, and therefore it's black, and therefore the light can no longer come through. So therefore, in that Rudra Shiva position, the full manifestation is not there. So Mahavishnu and Sada Shiva, both of these personalities are present in Advaita Acharya. The Chaitanya Charitamrita is emphasizing more than the Mahavishnu identity, and the Chaitanya Bhagavat is emphasizing more the Shiva, the Sada Shiva identity. So in this way we see a little bit the tattva of Advaita Acharya. So Advaita Acharya is particularly the one who is in this world, and he is the Supreme Lord in this world. And therefore Advaita Acharya is the first one. He appears before Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and it is Advaita Acharya who specifically has that concern for the living beings. And therefore it is Advaita Acharya who is thinking of how to deliver the conditioned souls. Now it's interesting that Advaita Acharya is the Supreme Lord, and he is thinking about delivering the conditioned souls, and therefore he begins to worship the Supreme Lord. So here we're seeing an instance of God worshipping God, which I think is something unique to our tradition. I have not heard in other traditions that they have that God is worshipping God. But we have it. Yeah? And the reason why, which may be puzzling, is that in the Bhagavad Gita, it is described that the mission of the Supreme Lord is paritranaya sadhanam vinasya saduskritam dharma samstarpanatya sambhavami yuge, that the Supreme Personality of Godhead comes into this world, and that his mission is to establish the principles of religion and annihilate the demons. And that's basically what the incarnations of the Lord do. So Krishna also does that a little bit, but Krishna does more. The Supreme Personality of Godhead is the one who can display not only principles of Dharma and not only annihilate demons, but he can also display the opulence, the full opulence, including all the love of God, of the spiritual world. That cannot be displayed by any of the incarnations. That only the Supreme Lord himself can manifest. So Advaita Acharya, knowing this, Advaita Acharya thought, yes, yes, I can, of course, I can give everyone liberation from birth and death, that I can do. I can deliver them from samsara, from this cycle of birth and death, but that's, I'm not interested in that. If I can somehow or other make Krishna himself appear, then they can get love of God. So Advaita Acharya was thinking of how to make Krishna appear. And then one day he read in a particular scripture, the name slipped my mind just now, a verse. And the verse said that if you offer me just a leaf and some water, I become so indebted that there is nothing in my possession that I can offer in return. Right? And Advaita Acharya, when he read that verse, suddenly it dawned upon him. It dawned upon him. He said, it is the nature of the Lord to reciprocate. As you surrender unto me, I reward you accordingly. So Krishna, by nature, is inclined to reward his devotee for whatever service he does. That's what he does. He reciprocates. But now it says, if you offer him a leaf, a tulsi leaf, and some water, Ganga water, then he doesn't have anything to offer in return. So then what can he offer? Then he'll be forced to offer himself. Therefore, we have to understand when Advaita Acharya was on the banks of Shantipur worshipping with tulsi leaf and Ganga water, the Shaligram Shila of the Lord, that it wasn't exactly worship. Rather, it was like a conspiracy. It was aimed to force the Supreme Lord to appear like that. That is what we can understand. So, Advaita Acharya, sometimes he was tempted. It is said that Srivas Thakur was having kirtans in his house. They were both elders. Srivas was 35 years older to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and Advaita Acharya 52 years older. So they were both there for a long time before the appearance of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And so there's a whole... the whole Vaishnav community was centering around these two persons, Bhagavad Gita in the houses or in the house of Advaita Acharya and kirtan in the house of Srivas. So, you know, the people in the village of Srivas, they were getting quite upset. You know, every night this howling is going on. You know, I mean, it's too much. All this noise, and it's like it's dangerous. No, really. I mean, it's bringing big trouble to our village. Yes. What will the government say about this? No, really. Think about it. You know, I mean, the soldiers may just come, right? Because at that time Bengal was under Mohammedan rule. The country was, you know, under a foreign rule. The Muslims were in control, and it's like, you know, they don't like this, and it's such loud chanting and screaming, actually, you know, like going on really, like all night, and you can't even sleep in the place, and then they send soldiers and destroy the whole village, and in which scripture doesn't say anyway that this chanting should be going on like that. This is a total concoction. Where does it say that we should worship the Lord with all this howling and so on, right? So then Srivas's house was a typical Bengali house, as you can still see that today in Mayapur. The walls were not made of brick, but the walls were made of chattai, of some sort of bamboo matting, right? Quite strong actually, but light also, relatively light. And so the structure of the house was basically made of bamboo posts, right? As they still make them today. So these atheistic people, they were saying that they wanted to cut the house of Srivas loose and throw it in the river. Well, that would take quite a crowd to do, to pick up a whole house and throw it in the river. But it is possible that such a house, right, for a hundred or a few hundred men could have done it, you know. So there was a whole crowd of people and they were saying, yes, let's throw the house of Srivas in the river. Then Advaitacharya heard that. He said, and if now the Lord doesn't appear, then I myself will take my four-handed form and with my Sudarshan Chakra I will cut the heads of all these atheists. Which is what he didn't want to do, right? To establish the principles of religion and annihilate the demons. So therefore, we understand the position of Advaitacharya. A book that is important within our Sampradaya is a book that has been written by Kavi Karnapur, the original. Srila Kavi Karnapur was the son of Sivananda Sen. Sivananda Sen was an intimate associate of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And Kavi Karnapur, we know, Sivananda Sen, because he was intimate, was a householder who was greatly appreciated by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And he presented his son to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and put the child on the ground, and the child crawled and somehow or other put the toe of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in his mouth when he was like a few months old. So this is a very potent process, right? To put the toe of the Lord in one's mouth is a process which can lead to great realizations, as we see in Kavi Karnapur, because when he was 5 years old, he started to compose amazing verses. Up to that age, his name was Puridas, but then his name was changed by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu himself, who heard the verse and who just said, like, he is a great poet who can pour nectar into the ears. So here we have like a great scholar of poet who can just fill our ears with nectar. That is Kavi Karnapur. So he wrote a book, Gode Ganadesh Deepika, and it is a book, kind of the who is who in Chaitanya Lila. Because what it explains is that as Chaitanya Mahaprabhu himself is none other than Krishna, all his associates, the associates of Krishna, also appeared along with him. And then Kavi Karnapur cites the diary of Swarup Damodar Goswami. This diary of Swarup Damodar Goswami is a very mysterious thing in our whole Sampradaya, because Swarup Damodar, again the original, was the personal secretary of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And therefore he was, amongst the devotees, a great authority. And whatever Swarup Damodar was most learned and most expert in scripture. And it was the case that if anyone wanted to come to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, you know, there were a lot of people who had written something and wanted Chaitanya Mahaprabhu to hear it. Because, you know, that was an endorsement, you know what I mean? I mean, I wrote this commentary and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu personally heard it. Oh, really? It was a very famous commentary. The commentary that was heard by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. The poetry that was personally endorsed by Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So therefore everyone came and wanted whatever they wrote or wanted Chaitanya Mahaprabhu to hear it. So it was Swarup Damodar Goswami's job to filter through all these materials. So if anybody came, they first had to read it to Swarup Damodar, who was like, a super editor, you could say, someone who would go murder on it, you know what I mean, and find like any fault in the, it's like when everyone else thought it was great, Swarup Damodar, it stinks, you know, wrong. hands off because of this. And he would expose any misconception or any fault. So Swarup Damodar Goswami has great authority in the whole hierarchy of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's associates. Swarup Damodar, from time to time in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, he emerges, not very much, only sometimes. But when he does emerge, he does have that authority. Right? But otherwise, it's not that there are chapters and chapters about Swarup Damodar. There are chapters about Haridas Thakur, there are chapters about Rupa and Sanatan and so on, but not like chapters about Swarup Damodar. And then Swarup Damodar, he kept a diary while being the secretary of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And you see, at the end, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, the last 18 years of his life, he spent in Jagannath Puri. 6 years in that period, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was every year sharing with all the devotees from Bengal the celebration of Rath Yatra. Everyone would come and stay at least for 3 months. And it was a big festival, Rath Yatra, and the whole period, you know, kirtans and this, that, so many water sports, ecstatic pastimes, you know, like Advaita Acharya having a water fight with Nityananda, and of course losing it, right? Nityananda just splashing the water in his eyes, and just and then finally, you know, then he starts cursing, who is this Avaduta anyway, what is his caste, and you know, like he's disrespecting the brahmanas, things like that. So all these things were going on. One time, even Advaita Acharya was floating in the water, and Lord Chaitanya used him as a bed in the water, just like Ananta Sesh, right? Like, so again, to indicate his eternal identity, and this pastime shows he was acting as Ananta Sesh, Mahavishnu, and then there was the Lord resting upon him. So again, illustrating his subordinate position to Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu very clearly. It is that all these kind of things happened in the first 6 years. But then, in the last 12 years, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu went into like a more internal state of consciousness and just became so overwhelmed by ecstasies that he just, virtually speaking, was no longer in communication with the world. Some mundane historians like to call it he went mad, right? But not ordinary madness, transcendental madness in ecstasy of love of God. So during this time, the devotees were not invited to come anymore from Bengal. So therefore, the devotees from Bengal, they were basically in separation during that time, during those last 12 years. But a few devotees, namely Swarup Damodar, namely Ramananda Rai, those two were very intimate, close associates of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu during that time, taking care of him. Then there were some other residents of Puri, and Raghunath Das also came. And Raghunath Das became he joined Chaitanya Mahaprabhu quite late in the game. So he only joined when Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was already in Puri at that time. Not in the last 12 years, but Raghunath Das joined a little bit before these last 12 years. And Raghunath Das was also there during that period. And he was appointed by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu under the care of Swarup Damodar. So, anyway, there is this Kadacha, this diary of Swarup Damodar, which has been kept about this last period of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, you know, so an interesting part. What happened there, everyone would like to know. And that diary is lost. It's gone. All right, so that was the end of the lecture. a bit of an anti-climax, climax, but
then what happened was that Raghunath Das Goswami, he heard that diary. He heard it from Sarup Damodar. And then Raghunath Das Goswami came to Vrindavan afterwards. And Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami had an intimate connection with Raghunath Das. Krishnadas was already quite old at that time, but he was the servant of Raghunath Das, and Raghunath Das became his Siksha Guru. And so, therefore, something filters through of this diary of Sarup Damodar Goswami in the Chaitanya Charitamrita via Raghunath Das. So Raghunath Das had an important role to play. Now, somehow or other, how exactly is not known, but Kavi Karnapur also got a little bit of access to Sarup Damodar's diary. And Kavi Karnapur introduces a very important point. He introduces the point, he says, that formally when Krishna appeared with all his associates and expansions, he appeared in five truths. He said, and now Krishna has again appeared in the form of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and again in this form of these five truths. So this is interesting, because we never heard it like that anywhere else. That the Panchatattva, and we heard about Panchatattva, in fact, we worship him here on the altar. And why are we worshipping the Panchatattva, actually? I mean, who told you to worship the Panchatattva? And on the basis of what scripture are you worshipping the Panchatattva? And why do you have in your headquarters in Mayapur deities of Panchatattva? And who, on whose authority? we are finding that it is Sarup Damodar Goswami who has identified these personalities, namely Panchatattvamakam Krishnam Bhaktarupa Sarupakam Bhaktavataram Bhaktakam Namana Bhakti Shaktikam. This verse is directly from the diary of Sarup Damodar Goswami, cited by Kavi Karnapur and Gaurakanadesh Deepika, where it comes first, and then repeated in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, taken from Kavi Karnapur. So that's interesting, and this verse is establishing very clearly the Panchatattva as a unit. You read the Chaitanya Bhagavat, you read, which is one biography, you read another biography, Chaitanya Mangal, you read all these biographies, but you don't find the concept of Panchatattva mentioned once. You hear about Advaita Acharya, you hear about Nityananda, you hear about Kadadar, Srivas, you hear about all of them as amongst the associates of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. You hear, and there is mention, that Nityananda is the Supreme Lord, that Advaita Acharya is the Supreme Lord. But Kadadar as Shakti Tattva, no, not identified like that. Srivas as that they are a unit, yeah? A unit. So, but it is, and we have maybe all of us have seen, or maybe not all of us, but maybe many of us have seen a chart of all the incarnations of Krishna. You can see if you want to see one. I have one. Oh no, I don't have my computer. That and send it to you by mail. Anyway, it's this chart. There are many such charts which show the incarnations of Krishna. And it shows that first there is the Swayamrupa. Swayamrupa, the original form of Krishna. Swayam means his own form. Krishna's own form. His own form. The own form of Krishna is manifesting in two categories.
Krishna expands himself in Dwarka in 16,108 Krishnas. Yeah. There he is, 16,108 Krishnas with 16,108 wives. Who can do that? Yeah. That's Krishna. So Krishna just multiplies himself sometimes, just like that. There's two, there's three, there's 16,108. I think, was it 107 or what? Well, it's lots, that's for sure. Heaps, as they say in Australia, mate. Heaps. Heaps, right? Yeah, that's a fact. So these, and then there are other direct expansions of Krishna personally. They are, so the Dwarka expansion known as Prakash expansions. Then there are further expansions of Krishna where it's Krishna still himself, but he changed a little. Like Balaram, he's Krishna, but now he's white. Huh? What happened to you? You're so pale. He is white. Yes. There's the Vaibhava forms of Krishna, the Vaibhava Vilas. But these are all in the Swayam Prakash, in the direct manifestation of Krishna. Are you still with me? Okay. And then, so these are the direct forms of Krishna, non-different. Balaram's non-different from Krishna. Then you have further expansions of Krishna, the Tathagatma Rupa. And then you see, like, these are expansions which are not, like, having the same potency anymore. They have, like, minimized potency. So in this way, we see that the way that the scriptures are dividing up all the expansions of Krishna, actually, they include all these tattvas. You have, namely, the original Swayam Rupa. You have Pancha Tattva Makam Krishna, the original Krishna. Then, you know, he is Bhakta Rupa. He appears in the form of the devotee. And then Nityananda, the next form, Bhakta Swarupa. Bhakta Sarupakam. I always call our Swarup in Durban, I call him Swarupakam. It's affection. Anyway, so he is Swarupakam means Nityananda is the own form of Krishna. That's what it means. Yes. So that's the same as Balaram, the very own form of Krishna. Then the next category, right, was the Tathagatma Rupa. That means the avatars. There's all the avatars of Krishna. So many avatars, guna avatars, lila avatars, you know, so many avatars. I won't get into the detail of that, but the avatar. So then we get the avatar category. That's Advaita Acharya. Bhakta Pancha Tattva Makam Krishna Bhakta Rupa Sukham Bhakta Avataram. Bhakta Avatar. There you go. Advaita Acharya. It's the Bhakta Avatar. And then you get like Bhakta Shakti. You get the Shakti. So it is said that the next category of personalities amongst the associates of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu are the expansions of Krishna's direct energy, the internal energy of Krishna, just like Srimati Radharani, and her immediate expansions are the Asta Sakis and many other Sakis. And all these Sakis, are not jiva tattva. They're not living beings like we are. And they are expansions of Krishna's internal energy. So there are these eternal associates of Krishna in the spiritual world who are not jivas, who are not living beings like we are, but who are direct expansions of Krishna's energy. And they are known sometimes as the Ragatmika Bhaktas, or as those, they are our role models who are eternally associates of Krishna. They never fall down, and they are like our models, right? And then there are the jivas. So Gadadhar is in the Shakti Tattva category, an expansion of Radharani, and then, and Ramananda Roy, an expansion of Vishakha,
in that category, and Swarup Damodar in that category, an expansion of Lalita. And then we get Srivas, who is not other than Narada Muni, and representing the perfect Jiva. So, okay, now we have Panchatattva. So we see the five personalities, and we see that the same five tattvas are manifest with Krishna. And that is why we're worshipping Panchatattva, that we're worshipping Krishna in five features. We're worshipping not just Krishna, Bansarivala, Bansarivala, Eto, Bansarivala, Darur, Anandanam Pava. No, we're worshipping him in that connection. So this is what the Sampradaya of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is teaching. This is not commonly understood. Even the sons of Advaita Acharya didn't understand it. But Achyutananda understood. And therefore Achyutananda is counting as a branch, a bona fide branch of the Chaitanya tree. And Achyutananda, even after the disappearance of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, lived on for quite a while longer. And Achyutananda came to Kateri. Kateri, work. Kateri is the place where about 80 years after Chaitanya Mahaprabhu appeared. 80 years later, there was a meeting in Kateri, which was the place of Narottam Das Thakur. It was historical, because in all of Bengal, there were so many philosophies about the teachings of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. But at Kateri, the proper teachings were established based on the scriptures, through the writings of the Goswami, through Achyutananda and by Janava Mata, who was the widow of Nityananda. And in that way, in Bengal, our movement became really established. So it's not that the movement all got it right all at once. There were in the beginning many devotees that didn't quite get it. They didn't quite know the whole theology as we have it now. But about 80 years after Chaitanya Mahaprabhu appeared, it was clearly established. I think at 1576, something earlier, it's in Kateri. So we can see that we are maybe not so qualified, but we are sitting right on top of a very refined understanding of the Absolute Truth. So therefore this whole, it was a long explanation, but still it's good to kind of know this stuff. Actually, we should actually know this, because this is what we represent. I don't know if you can remember it all, maybe not, but it's recorded. You can download it from KK Swami or KKS, whatever it's called, blog.com. Any questions or comments? I hope it didn't blow you out. I like the Chaitanya Charitamrita, and I spend a lot of time studying it and studying around it, and therefore.
So I thank you for such a wonderful explanation of it, actually. It's so beautiful. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much for appreciating
your expertise in Chaitanya Charitamrita. It's very visible right now. One thing I did want to ask, because Chaitanya Chandrayana is also understood as an authorized biography,
mm-hmm.
and that's by Kalikarna Purna.
Also,
is that principle of Panchatantra established in there, or is it established in?
No, it's established in the Gauragana, it's Deepika.
That came afterwards, isn't it?
Well, it's not so clear. The date of the Chaitanya Charitamrita Natak is not so certain. But the Gauragana, this Deepika, has a colophon. Right? A colophon is a dating at the end. See, oftentimes you can see Prabhupada also does it, you know, at the end of the Chaitanya Charitamrita. Oops, one sec. Appendix says, well, anyway, it's I think maybe he writes at the end of the introduction. He writes that the book has been completed on such and such day or such and such month in such and such year. Yeah? So that is a common practice amongst acharyas, which is useful, you know, and adds authority to the book and so on. So Kavi Karnapur followed that also in the Gauragana, it's deep. But there's no colophon in the Natak.
What does the
Gauragana have to do with it?
1576.
And the Chaitanya Charitamrita is expected to be completed by 1610. Yeah, it's a lot late. Yeah. There's still a lot of, and Kavi Karnapur was young, so there was a lot of scope that the Chaitanya Charitamrita Natak could have been written after the Gauragana. Yeah. Yeah.
I understand that what happened at K3 today is still traditionally continued with GBC meetings.
No, that's my book. K3, we went to K3, and K3 is just on the border of India and Bangladesh, and it's just on the Bangladesh side. And there was this huge festival with the idea to establish the teachings of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu had instructed Rupa and Sanatan to write down the teachings, and they did it in Vrindavan. So these manuscripts came from Vrindavan, they were brought to Kateri, and many copies were made. See, Narottam was from an aristocratic family, and he lived in Kateri. So he engaged many brahmanas in writing manuscripts. Then Srinivas had a connection with another king who was also arranging for many manuscripts, and Shamananda brought many manuscripts from Orissa that were copied there. So they had many copies made of the books of the Goswamis, and then everyone just got like, and here is a Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, a nectar of devotion. I mean, this is the Upadesamrita, right? And you know, so everyone for the first time got all these books, right? These are the books that we have. Now, you know, everybody is like, okay, the nectar devotion, yeah, I got that one, you know, get it in any format, which format would you want, you know, EPUB or MOBI or PDF or, you know, I mean, whatever you want it to be, or you want a hard copy, I mean, you know, got one in every pocket, right? There's study guides on them, you know, I mean, commentaries, I mean, you know, it's like, come on. And now we have all that, it's very casual. But that was like a revelation. Yeah? All these books of the Goswamis they got. And through that, this proper understanding was established very clearly in Kateri. And then what they did in Kateri, they established also deities. So they were making Kateri into a place of pilgrimage, where like people from all over Bengal would come, so that this culture would be preserved there, and of around this knowledge, and the people, pilgrims would come from everywhere to for the taking darshan, and then, but you know, they expected also some opposition in this meeting, that there might be some who might argue against these conclusions from the Goswamis. Well, that's their opinion. We actually, therefore, they brought. What happened was, Janava Mata, the widow of Lord Nityananda, She, after each other left, she traveled to different holy places, and she went to Vrindavan, where she had a discussion with Rupa Goswami about these literatures, and Rupa Goswami personally explained his writings to her, and she was in complete agreement with it. So she got it, like, whatever she heard from Nityananda, she heard directly from Rupa Goswami, and then they brought her to Kateri as well, and she was, you know, very senior. Who could argue with her? And even if you tried to argue with her, she was well groomed, you know. She had all the arguments also, so no one argued. All the big pundits were quiet. Okay, this is how it is. So Kateri was a big victory in Bengal. That this is a revolution, a change. But then, because Bangladesh later became a Muslim area, predominated by the Muslims, more and more. Was already at that time, Bengal's Muslim became more and more predominated by Muslim influence. Therefore, all the deities have been moved, and 6 sets of deities were installed in Kateri, 1 Vrajamohana in Vrindavan, some deities are in Jagannath Puri, and there are other deities that have no fixed residence. They travel from place to place. I'm trying to find out where they are. It's a little difficult. Yeah. But so far I've tracked it down that they don't have a fixed residence, that they're moving, roaming deities. But we're going to find them. Isn't it, people? We're going to go. Yes.
You've seen it very small moment. Do say that it was Janava Devi who persuaded Jiva Goswami to take the books. Is it not like that?
I think there is something like that in Bhakti Ratnakara. Yes. 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 See, the books that give information about these things are the Bhakti Ratnakara, the Narottam Vilas, and the Prema Vilas. 3 books are like considered authorized that can fill in details on this matter.
Maharaj, does it appear that there are still parts of the philosophy that Prabhupada maybe communicated subtly and we're only discovering now?
Dharmasya tattvam nihitam guhayam, that the absolute truth is not found in the scripture. It remains hidden within the hearts of the pure devotees. And by following in their footsteps, it will be revealed. Yeah. So yes, a portion of what is there has to be revealed. Yeah. You cannot get it by, like, you know, some book or a tape or, you know, a video or the inside story, you know. I mean, tell me. Tell me, what's the inside story? All right, can you tell us the inside story? Nah, sorry. Sorry, no excess. It's hidden in the heart of pure devotees. I can't go there.
I just wanted to ask if half of the sons of Sri Advaita got deviated, so just how does one thing not get deviated without spiritual practice?
Deviation is a symptom of over-intelligence. When you start to give a lot of importance to your own intelligence, see, it's like, I'm very smart, I figured it all out. And one should be very careful to keep a humble position and to, in his own words and according to his own understanding, repeat what we have heard within Sampradaya. So not that we are parrots, you know, we're only allowed to be parrots. And you can never think, that's speculation. So it is interesting that a distinction is made between mental speculation and philosophical speculation. And mental speculation is that type of speculation where you just start to try and come up and develop your own theories. All right, this is very interesting. Whereas philosophical speculation is where You accept the truth of the acharyas, but you try to understand how it's true. Because, you know, you don't always get every detail, right? So then you have to sort of think, hey, but how does this work exactly? That's allowed. That is trying to understand, trying to really assimilate, not just parroting the philosophy without understanding. You know, we have to actually digest it and assimilate and understand what is really being said here. Then we go deep. And that's first class. You see, it's said like a Kanista Adhikari has weak faith and doesn't have much knowledge. Madhyam Adhikari has knowledge of the scripture, but not fully. And in opposing debate, he could be defeated by an opponent. Right? Whereas the Uttama is deeply rooted and deeply understands in full. He cannot be defeated. He has his conviction is completely clear because he understands. So, but we should not be over-intelligent. We should always, when we become more intelligent than the acharyas, asara, useless, become useless. So the deviations will be there. But the nature of the Sankirtan movement is, well, I compare it like this. These deviations are like they're like an oil spill on the which comes on top of ISKCON. Okay? If we have a deviation in ISKCON. But and temporarily a deviation in ISKCON can occur. But then, and cover the surface, cover the clear knowledge. But then the wind and the waves, they throw off the oil, they throw it out. So any deviation will automatically take a distance from Prabhupada, and it will go out. It cannot bear to stay. It becomes too confining, you know what I'm saying? It just becomes too confining. They'll be in disagreement with Prabhupada, they'll feel too confined, and therefore the deviator will go out the door. And in this way, the wind and the waves throw off the deviation onto the land, and the sea will again be clear. So, ISKCON will preserve its purity in the teachings. But on the surface, sometimes there can be a period where there is some deviation, or some, it's possible that all of us get it wrong. Yeah, it doesn't mean that might makes right. Purity makes right, not might makes right. Not all of us together say so, and therefore it is so. Not necessarily. Maybe all of us say it wrong. It's possible. So deviation could temporarily cover the Sankirtan movement, but it will be thrown away. And these books, right, this is like the core. This is the core. And this Chaitanya Charitamrita in particular, like, is the ultimate book, right, from which establish our existence. This is our identity. Yeah. This is what you are. It's on the basis of this that we're doing what we're doing, actually. That's why this book is kind of important, not radioactive, and we should actually read it. Thank you very much.